We have a loaded show coming up on this Tuesday. Glad you're with us. On the program, as always, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. What another gorgeous day out there. Hope you're enjoying it. If we can if we can be in polo shirt type of weather from here on out, I'm down for it. I'm really down for it. And it looks like we're getting there towards the end of April here, heading into May. There's so much going on. Last night was pretty wild, I got to tell you. I don't know if I expected 10,000 people to be at Gainbridge Fieldhouse to literally watch a WNBA draft. And look, I don't know if there's been an NBA draft that has been watched with 10,000 people watching it. Now, you know, Indiana does it a little bit wacky because I don't know if I've ever told this story on this program. To me as a young kid, it was kind of not a big deal in this regard. But back in the 90s Pacers, I remember some of those big series, actually the last series that they had with the Milwaukee Bucks. You remember the corner three hit by Travis Best? We were in the building. Me and my family were in the building for that one. It was a lot of fun. But that's not the craziest thing that happens with all of this. Late 90s, early 2000s Pacers was so crazy that they opened Gainbridge Fieldhouse, Market Square Arena, whichever one was in operation at that point, and they had the game on the scoreboard in the middle of the facility, and they invited fans to come and watch those games. And so, you know, as crazy Indiana Pacers fans my family and I were, we went. You know, I was in my early teens at that time. I remember going as a family. That's not the craziest part. The craziest part is some of my family from North Dakota and Minnesota at different portions of that long-term playoff run would come to visit us in April and May. And, you know, we didn't do the family thing saying, oh, we got family, we can't go. No, we brought them with us. We brought them with us to go to the arena, watch these games back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And you know what? It was totally normal to us. Not a big deal. You know, if you couldn't be at the games, the away games, you found a way to watch it with all your closest fan friends, I guess. And, we still laugh about that to this day, me and my family, of how from the outside, that looks absolutely ridiculous that you would go to the arena and watch, watch it. Just watch the game and not actually attend the game. Anyway, that's what it made me feel like yesterday with the WNBA draft happening. For some reason, Indiana's just a little bit different in how they do things, and that is one of those. But it was a spectacular night last night, and certainly Indianapolis and Indiana in particular was the center of the basketball universe with Caitlin Clark being drafted number one, as she was expected to do. And, you know, that's the crazier part of all of this, too, is that everybody in attendance already knew that Caitlin Clark was going to be the draft pick, and yet 10,000 people showed up at Gainbridge Fieldhouse to watch it on the big screen. I mean, if that doesn't tell you how Indiana's a little bit different in how they consume basketball, I can't help you. It was a lot of fun to watch, and now we move forward with Caitlin Clark here, Aaliyah Boston, that crew. And by the way, the WNBA season is like 3.5-4 weeks away, so it's not like a player gets drafted and you have to wait a long period of time. The WNBA is happening as we speak, getting ready for things. And I'm sure Caitlin Clark, if she's not in the building today, she will be here sometime this week, and a press conference will ensue, etc. And she's going to be the center of attention this summer in Indiana sports, and good for it. I mean, why not? I think it's great. I think it's it brings a little bit of a different feel to Indiana and Indianapolis in particular. So go for it, I guess. Should be interesting to see how all of that plays out. So coming up on the show today, we have Donan Cruz, Ball State men's volleyball coach, as they prepare for the semifinal round of the MEVA volleyball tournament. Their matchup with Lindenwood happening at Worthen Arena in the evening on Thursday. We'll talk to Coach, see what's going on with the team heading into that big Thursday matchup. And then the final would be sometime next week. I'm sure Coach would know that better than we would at this point. So Mitchell. We're going to talk to Coach just shortly after 4:15 on the program today. Kyle Smedley, Ball State Daily News, going to join us a little bit later on as well. Some transfer portal related items yesterday, Ball State basketball, etc. We'll talk about all those particulars with Kyle coming up as he normally joins us on Tuesday. He's with us again today. There was some news in the upcoming Pacers-Bucks series coming up that starts on Sunday, game one of the 3-versus-6 matchup. And we speculated on, is Giannis Antetokounmpo going to be healthy for the beginning of that series? Well, we got our answer today. It looks like he will not be available early on for the Milwaukee Bucks in that series. And I know what the early thoughts would be on something like that, that, oh my gosh, one of the best players in the world is out. Pacers can cruise early on in Milwaukee. And, you know, I find it interesting, and I think it's going to be a really, really unique set of circumstances for Indiana. But I will say this. Damian Lillard is still on that Milwaukee Bucks basketball team. He did not have a great year. Having to be a co-star with another player on that basketball team was a major adjustment for him because, you know, when Damian Lillard gets traded to Milwaukee, he knows he's going to a team that is already kind of run by another star, whereas Damian Lillard's done that for his entire career in Portland. It's been a major transition for him. Now, with Giannis likely not playing early on, this is, in a weird way, could be an advantage for Milwaukee, could be an advantage for Damian Lillard. And let me explain why, and we'll get to this a little bit later on. Like, you know, when you lose Giannis, it changes the style in which you play. It has to. No question about it. You go from a guy that can play inside and out, that, you know, defends the rim, that flies around, and honestly, you put him at the top of the circle, give him the basketball, and have him put his head downhill and go make a play. You know, it changes the way you set up your offense. It changes the way that you likely set up your defense as well. Now, with him out, it becomes a traditional type of NBA team. And what I mean by that is you can spread it out and be a more perimeter-oriented basketball team with obviously led by Damian Lillard. And by the way, we have not seen Milwaukee play like that this year. So as much as it might be an advantage with Giannis out, and how could you say it wouldn't be a better opportunity for Indiana with Giannis out, even though the Pacers played pretty well with a full-strength Milwaukee team in the regular season, they are going to attack very differently offensively. And, you know, if Damian Lillard gets hot for a couple of games as he's the primary option and, you know, hits 5 or 6 or 7 from three, it can put you in a lot of trouble. So I don't want to say you take Milwaukee lightly at all, because you definitely should not, because they're going to play stylistically very different than they played all year long. And, oh, by the way, you really haven't had to see them play like this at any time this year. Now, clearly, you can attack them a little bit differently at the rim. The Pacers are, you know, going to have more favorable matchups on the perimeter. From, you know, I think Giannis doesn't get enough credit for what he does defensively, but it stood out to me today in listening and reading some of the talk around this series. Oh man, Giannis sounds big opportunity, and yes, like it would be dumb to not say it wouldn't be a little bit of an advantage, because Giannis is one of the top three players in the world, right? And how could you say that Milwaukee's better without him? That is by no means the conversation. But, it's kind of like, and we've seen this at different times, and I hate to even mention his name, but Paul George, when Kawhi Leonard was out a couple of years ago with the Los Angeles Clippers, you know, he played a little bit more freely offensively with Kawhi off the floor, because Kawhi, when he's on the floor, is the number one option, and then Paul George, with him out, has to take a lot more responsibility. Milwaukee is going to have to attack in a different way, and you really don't have tape. You really don't have a sample size of how Milwaukee's going to attack this way with out Giannis Antetokounmpo because, quite frankly, that's the way they played all along. And by the way, you know, Doc Rivers, look, I don't know if he's a great coach. He's had great players, and, you know, he's been around different teams and whatever the case may be. But Doc's had players in the past that he's given the ball in their hands and let them go create. You know, he did that with James Harden a little bit in Philadelphia. He's done that in Boston. He's done that in with the Los Angeles Clippers as well. So I just would be cautious if I were you, thinking the Pacers automatically have an advantage in this series now with Giannis out the first couple of games at least, that it would be a disappointment if they didn't jump out to an early lead. I honestly think for Damian Lillard, this is the best thing that could happen for him, because it really hasn't been a seamless fit alongside Giannis, because Damian Lillard came from a situation in Portland that obviously he was used to being the guy taking the shot and creating offense with volume. And Damian Lillard's had some great playoff moments where he's been on isolation, you know? So I would just say, early on in a series, you better have a plan for Damian Lillard. I know that sounds very remedial, that sounds very basic, but you better have a plan to bottle up a very aggressive Damian Lillard, because that's what you're going to see on Sunday. You're going to see a guy that is going to put up 20 shots. I mean, that's just what he's going to do, and have a plan for Chris Middleton, et cetera. So I just found it interesting when people kind of jumped out right away and said, oh my gosh, major advantage for Indiana. Yes, it changes a lot of things, but it's not like you have it in the bag because Giannis is out. I just want to make that clear. So thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. A lot to get to on the program today. We're going to be joined by the head coach of Ball State Men's Volleyball, the number one seed in the MEVA tournament. Ball State is hosting this tournament at Worthen Arena this week, and certainly a huge opportunity ahead for them, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see how all of this plays out for Ball State Men's Volleyball. So we'll preview the Thursday matchup with Coach when we come back on the program, Power, on a Tuesday here on the Talk of Muncie, WMUN. Yes, as always, presented by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Roan and Muncie, online at wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you, 48 hours or less. That's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference on Nebo Road in Muncie, and online at wallsfurniture.com. Hope you're enjoying your Tuesday. It's a big week for a variety of different reasons, but if you're talking about Ball State Men's Volleyball, the MEVA tournament continues. Semi-final happening at Worthen Arena coming up on Thursday against Lindenwood, and we're glad to be joined by their head coach, Donan Cruz, as Ball State on to the semifinals. Again, Coach, great to have you on. Congratulations for getting to this point. You know, how much do you reference the postseason during the season, or is it really process about one match, one game at a time, and you get to this point and trust what you've done to this point?
Well, you know, for us, obviously, from the get-go back in August, you know, we were doing some goal setting with the team, and our objective is around, you know, trying to win the regular season. And then from there, it's about winning the conference tournament and getting back to the national championship. So I think that conversation is always in our dialogue in the arena and in practice. So not anything different for us. We just try to stick to the things we do well in practice to help us get prepared for Thursday's match.
You know, it was back in January. I think we had you on at a different point right in between. And we were asking the question, like, when do you really know kind of the feel of your own team? Because every team kind of takes up a different makeup. And, you know, from the outside, Coach, I think everybody wants to compare every team you have to what you had 2 years ago. But what makes this team different, the same philosophy-wise of what you were able to accomplish a couple of years ago, and then this particular team being its best version of themselves right now?
Yeah, you know, I think the difference overall with this team is we have a lot of new talent, and we got a lot of deep talent too. We got a lot of different guys that could step up in different moments and create a better fit for certain matchups we're looking at. And you know, in our first year, we had that great run to the Final Four, and And then, you know, we're just right there on the edge last year, losing to Ohio State in the conference tournament championship. So, you know, I feel like we've got all the components to win this tournament this weekend, and we're happy that we're hosting. We got a good matchup here on Thursday against Lindenwood, the four seed. And, you know, I just feel like this team has been pretty resilient. They've overcome some challenges of guys not always being healthy, guys in and out of lineups, and we've really had to figure out how to adjust accordingly in order to do what was best for the team.
It's Donan Cruz, Ball State men's volleyball coach, with us on the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. What'd you like most about the win you guys had on Saturday, a 3-0 a sweep of Queens University of Charlotte? What stood out most about the way you were attacking early on and being able to close that one out?
Yeah, I thought, you know, we actually got off to a relatively slow start, and in the playoffs, like any other sport, everyone is coming out to put their best volleyball out there. And I thought Queens played really good for the first, you know, 25 points. And then after that, our team just really kicked it into high gear. And seeing our guys identify that situation and stay on top of what we were doing, we really started to run away with that match in sets 2 and 3. So just that veteranship and knowing that we were in control of that match was probably the best part about that win on that day.
Is there anything about the start? You know, one of the questions I was going to ask, you know, you have a lot of players that really haven't been a number one seed, maybe even haven't played in this conference tournament aspect, regardless if it's at home or not. They know the urgency of the moment. Anything about that start that you can attribute to that, and then maybe settling in to getting those nerves settled down in a way, Coach?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't say we're a young team, but we definitely don't have a lot of guys that have all been there and done that, you know. So I think sometimes that is a huge positive for us. It's kind of like you don't know what you don't know. But oftentimes, you know, we do find ourselves kind of looking for, hey, where's the answer and who's gonna kind of contribute in a given moment. But we've played, I don't know, probably close to 30 games to this point. And I feel like this season alone has given each individual on this team enough experience to be composed in these moments. And I think the veterans have done a good job of sharing their knowledge and experience with guys. And, hey, what do you got to do in preparation leading up to big games in the postseason? And how do we got to conduct ourselves to give us the best shot to win? And so I think it's kind of a combination of both. And we feel good about our match going into Thursday.
Yeah, right at 30, Coach. Nice. I mean, are there times throughout the years, Coach, you don't even know what game it is or what your record is or whatever? I mean, are there times you just get completely lost in the match at hand? I know that sounds crazy to the outside, but I'm sure it happens.
Yeah, it's, you know, everyone's kind of got their different vibe on what they pay attention to as a head coach. And quite honestly, like there are days where I'm not sure where we're at in terms of, hey, what's our ranking? How many matches we got left? And, you know, sometimes like guys in the gym today were like, I don't even know what day of the week it is. And, you know, I think our biggest preach right now has just been, how do you challenge yourself to stay present minded? You got to think about these student athletes are in, you know, got maybe like 2 or 3 weeks left of school. We got, you know, a group of 5 seniors that are ready to kind of turn the page and close this chapter in their life. So, you know, we got a lot of moving parts in what we do as a spring sport. And we just try to encourage the guys to stay pretty present minded. And that's my biggest focus, is trying to keep the guys engaged in today and kind of allow tomorrow to take care of itself.
It is Donan Cruz, Ball State men's volleyball coach, with us. Ball State hosting the MEVA tournament, the number one seed against the number 4 seed, Lindenwood, in the semifinal coming up on Thursday, 7 o'clock from Worthen Arena. If somebody hasn't seen this team, heard them described or whatever, how best would you describe the style and what makes you successful when you get a match win? What does it most often consist of?
Well, I think the biggest thing about our group is this is an extremely athletic team. And you hear that a lot in sports, but, you know, for us in volleyball, we got guys that, you know, just navigate the court really well. We got a bunch of high flyers on our team. And I think the most enjoyable thing, if I put my volleyball spectator and volleyball geek hat on, I just enjoy watching them practice and how they're able to move their body in the air and attack the ball the way they do. And, you know, that's what makes it fun and exciting. And I also think the same of the other three teams that are here in Muncie for the week. And, you know, you get a chance to come out, watch us play on Sunday, on Thursday at 7. You'll kind of see what I'm talking about.
So with an athletic crew, again, that is a huge benefit to be able to fly around, but in a lot of ways, Coach, is there development there when you have such an athletic team? Because, you know, athleticism in a lot of ways can help you win points, can help you, just do things that maybe the opponent can't. When you face an athletic, I guess the best way to ask this, Coach, do you have to coach an athletic team different than some team that's maybe great at fundamentals and maybe doesn't have as many as high flyers as the team you currently have?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the positive of the staff we have, too, is, you know, Christian, Mike, and myself, I think, value the training of fundamental and skill development. So, you know, a lot of that athleticism is in how we recruit and how we identify talent and then getting them here and teaching them the system that we want to run offense and defensively. Is kind of what pairs us to, I think, be, you know, the team that won the regular season. And yeah, I think the idea of being as skill and technically sound as well is critical. You know, I think at one point your athleticism will run out if you do not have the fundamentals to execute some of those systems. So, you know, it's equally what makes this group so fun to watch is not only do they have that, but some of our top guys really play the game so clean and have put the hard work and dedication into refining their skill. And I think it's what helps us put ourselves in position to win.
I think naturally with volleyball, when you talk about a big athletic crew, you notice it more so on the offensive end. But I think it's curious when you mention athleticism, Coach, and again, you're talking right now to a volleyball novice. You know, I learn a lot from hearing what you have to say and other coaches around here. But I would imagine, you know, volleyball is one of those sports where, you know, you think of basketball and football, there's man-to-man and zone defenses in a lot of ways. Well, in volleyball, you can't really go like man-to-man. It's always zone. And the reason I bring that up is the athleticism people can view, whether they've watched a lot of volleyball or not, when somebody's flying through the air. But the ability to cover ground from a defensive standpoint when you have an athletic crew, what does that allow you to do in ball control to frustrate an opponent that when you have an athletic team, I would imagine they can cover more ground than a very basic fundamental team, Coach?
Yeah, I mean, part of that too is size and physicality up front on the net. You know, just having big guys that could get up, help take space away from an attacker. And it sort of reduces the amount of court we have to defend. So, you know, it's kind of two-sided for us, and I feel like we got a really good balance in how our guys use their physicality as front row blockers and how that can create some serious problems for offenses. So I think it does start there for us. And then, you know, the speed and agility of our guys in the back row, given the amount of space they do have to end up defending in a given play, really allows us to execute some really good level defense on our end, you know, and that's an area where we're trying to get better. You know, I think at times where I wouldn't say it's our strongest suit, kind of in that off the ball defense, but we try to use our size and physicality and athleticism up on the net to block a few more balls. And, you know, I think that's something that we'll see ourselves doing pretty well on Thursday.
It is Donan Cruz, Ball State men's volleyball head coach, with us on the Power Talk of Muncie. The new WMUN Ball State hosting the MEVA tournament, the number one seed in this tournament playing in the semifinal round on Thursday against number four seeded Lindenwood. Well, you had a couple of different results with Lindenwood when you went to St. Charles, Missouri. It was a five-set match that you got done on February the 10th, and then when you most recently played them a couple of Saturdays ago, it was a 3-0 sweep at Worthen Arena. What do you look back on those two different matches and some of the things you can take from that in this match coming up on Thursday night, Coach?
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, a lot of playing in the postseason is like waking up on the right side of the bed and coming in with a good amount of intensity and energy. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing. You know, at this point in the year, Lindenwood wants to win just as much as we do. And they've been on a hot streak themselves. The good news is a lot of their hot streak has been happening down in St. Charles in their home court. So, you know, for us, anytime we get a chance to play in Worthen, we feel like we are just a better version of ourselves. It's a level of comfort, obviously, playing at home. But kind of the takeaway really is that, you know, right now is a time where you got to create your own energy and you got to just want it a little bit more than the other team. And it's kind of like, you know, gloves are off at this point. And teams are just trying to battle and keep their team keep their season alive. So we're expecting a good match, and we just know that although we're 2-0 against this team, we're expecting a good fight.
Yeah, pretty much everybody you play at this time in the tournament, this will be the third time you've seen them and the third time they see you. So you hear this cliche all the time, saving something for that next matchup or whatever. Is there, at this point, is there so much familiarity on both sides of the net, regardless of your playing, that there's not a lot you can save or they can save to add another wrinkle? Or is there some of that this time of the year, Coach?
Now there's a good amount of stat and data that we're using to maybe drive some decision making and what we're anticipating for, but man, it's about, we just finished March Madness, man. You watch these games and while these top teams prevail in the end, you know, along the way, a lot of it just has to do with grit and if you got enough in the tank to keep going. And I feel like this group, I feel like we just play a little bit better when we're down the stretch, and it's always been a part of our culture of Ball State men's volleyball. And, you know, I just feel like coming into Thursday and our hope to get to Saturday as well is just about fighting and wanting to keep our season going. So I think you're going to see a whole nother level of fight in our guys.
7 o'clock on Thursday evening, Ball State, the number one seed in the MEVA tournament versus number four seeded Lindenwood for a spot in the championship game coming up a little bit later this weekend. Hey, Coach, we know it's busy. Thanks for a few moments. Look forward to following along and talking to you very soon. Thanks for the time and good luck.
Mark, thank you so much. We appreciate your coverage, man.
That's Donan Cruz, Ball State men's volleyball head coach, with us on the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Again, a great opportunity to see some very high-level volleyball, and it's been another great year for Donan Cruz and his. I mean, ever since this is third year as head coach, and what Ball State has accomplished, they've gotten each of the previous two seasons to the championship game of the MEVA and an opportunity to head to the NCAA tournament in the Final Four, which they did 2 years back, and looks like they have another great opportunity to do that. But as Coach mentioned, look, there's so much familiarity on both sides of the net. Anything can happen at this point of the year. So, anywho, all right, coming up in a little bit, Kyle Smedley, Ball State Daily News, is going to join us as we talk all about Ball State athletics and more. But I want to bring up a conversation that, look, there's some times where I bring up topics on this program, and I have no idea it turns into what it ultimately turns into. So we'll address what we talked about yesterday, and this has created some opinions. We'll talk about that when we come back. Power Talk of Muncie, WMUN. As always, brought to you in part by State Farm agent Jason May. Make sure you're getting all the discounts you deserve by calling Jason at 747-7100 today. Glad you are with us on the program as always. So there's been a couple of topics over the years on this show that have absolutely taken on a life of their own to the point where I take this off of the show, go to social media, and get a real pull of it. And so I brought this up yesterday because every once in a while, you know, I talk about my weekend on a Monday show, and, you know, we talk things through. Now, over the last 6 to 8 weeks, there hasn't been exactly anything exciting in my life that I want to share with the audience, but you know, I had a big dilemma coming up on this past Sunday. So I mentioned it yesterday, got up around 7:30, you know, got up, went back to bed, and, you know, was just going to sleep for a little while longer. I knew I had to mow the lawn, right? Had to get it done. It was a great day for it. You know, we had nice sunny weather on Saturday. Some of that rain got dissolved a little bit, and then, you know, Sunday was the day. And so I'm about to go back to bed, and it's just after 8 o'clock, and I hear somebody else mowing. And, you know, I'm patient by nature. So my thought was this. I heard that. Then I heard kids playing outside in one of the backyards yards bordering our home. I'm sitting there, and I shrug my shoulders, and I'm like, I guess it's time to mow. So for the record, by the way, was not me. It wasn't me first. I was following neighborhood protocol. So I mowed. And nobody said anything to me. But, you know, the whole time I was mowing in my head, I'm like, is this acceptable on a weekend just after 8 o'clock? Or is it acceptable before 8 o'clock to do it? And I got to tell you, I took this to my own Facebook page, and in less than an hour's time, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 11 different messages about I have 10 emphatic no's and 1 absolutely acceptable. Here's some of the comments. No, just be a little patient. It will still be there after 8. Literally an emphatic no. If you want to be hated by everyone, go for it. I think any time after 8 is okay, but it better not be 7:59. I did not realize this was a big thing. And here we are. I guess I had a feeling that there was a decently fine line. And I just want to be fair on this. It wasn't me. It wasn't me. And you know what? I honestly don't, because I'm an early riser. So, I'm speaking for myself. I don't have an issue. I didn't have an issue with the person that was out there at 7:30 in my neighborhood. But I guarantee you there were people in my neighborhood that probably had an issue with that. I did not. But I guess I did not realize how opinionated this one topic could be. But here we are. So this one's taken a life of its own. If we have another update on this topic, I will certainly bring it up on tomorrow's program. But this is struck a nerve. There's a thing. There's an unspoken rule about this. So, anywho. All right, when we come back, Kyle Smedley, Ball State Daily News. That closes up a Tuesday show right after this. Final segment of a Tuesday edition of the program. Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, brought to you by Sheriff Council and Roofing. Your roofers that are protect your family. Make sure you're doing all you can to protect them. Sheriff Council and Roofing has been helping families for generations. Remember to call Pete Dahlia or look them up at worryfreeroof.com. As we're always glad to be joined on a Tuesday by Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News. He joins us right now. Well, another week, another transfer portal conversation, Kyle. It's never ending. I got to admit, I did not know the portal was still open for football. And honestly, it probed the question, are there different portal openings for basketball, football, other sports, or is the window kind of all the same?
No, so it is different depending on the sport. I was told by Mike New right after the spring game that the second wave, I guess, of the football transfer portal starts. It started yesterday, so that would have been Monday, April 15th. And so the way that it works, from my understanding, for college football is as soon as your season is over, the portal opens up, and then it closes for temporarily at some point once spring practice begins, where you have a few weeks of camp leading up to your spring game. But then once spring practice is over, teams have to take a break anyway. They are not allowed to practice with one another as a full team and have organized practices until, I believe, the end of May. And so Mike told me that the portal opened on the 15th, and I believe, if I remember right, he said that it closes, as far as people entering, it closes at the end of April. So right now we're in another window of the portal opening up for football, and I do believe that it's different for football and basketball because I don't know if basketball operates under that same system.
Well, and since you mentioned that, now I remember this last year. This was kind of a national story, but when Deion Sanders took over as college last year in the spring game, you know, some of the previous players were on that team and even players he brought in and played the spring game. And I think that Monday or Tuesday after the spring game, he had about 15 to 20 players that entered the portal after the spring game, kind of in that second window wave. And, you know, some players, and again, in Ball State's case, we're not talking about any one specific player, but in some cases, it's more advantageous for a player to hang around for the spring game to display their talents and then go in the second wave rather than go in the first.
Yeah, and I think too, like, it gives the player an extended look, or I guess a preview of what the season would look like potentially if they stick around the same program. So let's say there's a guy on the fence who was with the team the year before and says, you know what, I don't know for sure, but I'm just going to stick with what I know and see how it goes. And then once those spring practices happen and the spring game happens, you have a little bit better of an idea of how the season's going to go. And if you're still thinking that you might not like the direction, I think that's where you enter the portal. And it does make sense for the players, I think.
So in Kyle Kelly's case, that's who we're speaking of right now, Ball State's starting quarterback the second half of last year, responsible for a lot of success down the stretch with the run-first approach. And we even talked last week that there was likely going to be a quarterback battle between Kelly and Semonza, and maybe even a dual kind of quarterback opportunity similar to last year because of the two talents. Kyle Kelly's now in the transfer portal. What does this mean? Your thoughts when you saw the news yesterday?
I'll say this. I didn't know anything prior. I had no reason to think that it was likely, but I wasn't surprised. After knowing that spring camp, Semonza was getting just as many QB1 reps, if not more, than Kyle, I did think that there was a chance that Kyle could enter the portal because this would be the third year in a row of him trying to compete for a quarterback one spot. And whether he were to get it or not, I think that security matters in sports. It's not even just college sports. It's professional sports and even high school sports. I mean, I think about, you always felt better. You know, I played baseball in high school. You always felt better when you kind of knew that your name was going to be in the lineup than if you're maybe one of those fringe guys who doesn't know. You're more nervous coming up. I think that, I don't know this for sure because he hasn't told me anything, but I wouldn't be surprised if that had anything to do with it. And as far as what it means for Ball State football now that they're in this situation, I think it's a big loss. I do. I think Semonza has the raw intangibles for what you would like a quarterback to be, but I think that he is a lot more raw than Kyle is. He's obviously younger, and I also think that Kyle is a bit more versatile than Caden was or is. Kyle gets it done on the ground perhaps better than he does in the air, and he gets it done decent enough in the air. You know, he rushed last season for almost 750 yards. that's quite a bit for a college quarterback through just 12 games, and I think they're going to miss that versatility at quarterback.
Well, I was just about to go to this, but you might have answered the question already, and maybe this is my analysis for this, in that, you know, last year the Ball State offense struggled with, the 2-3 quarterback system. And, you know, in some ways, Kyle Kelly may have helped Ball State make their decision in a way. So for the Ball State program, as you look for it moving forward, and again, I mentioned this yesterday, we really didn't have Caden Semenza on the radar even in spring. It really started to happen in summer and in the late fall practice leading up to the first game, and then, you know, he's playing against Kentucky in game number one. So it's not, I guess, out of the realm that you recruited somebody and maybe they rise up a little bit more than you thought. That being said, the fact that right at this moment, Ball State it's moving forward with one quarterback and one leading quarterback, is that better for the program moving into the summer?
I do think that stability is nice. Now, obviously, I know that they like a transfer that they got from Marshall at quarterback. When Kyle was on the squad, this transfer was QB3. Now he's up to QB2, and I could definitely see some potential for him to battle out with Semenza for who's going to start. However, right now, the guy that's been with the program and knows the system the best and is the best option in my eyes for QB1 is Caden. And so I think that that does a lot for your offense when you kind of know. I mean, last year, Mike News said that the offense struggled to adapt after the loss of Brady Hunt. And I know that that's a different position. Brady Hunt was a tight end. But they assumed that they were going into the season last year with Brady Hunt and Tanner Koziel on both sides of the field as tight ends. And then when you have to adapt last minute to having one of those two tight ends out for the rest of the season, Mike New said that they didn't adapt fast enough. And so now, if you know who your quarterback's going to be, that allows not only the quarterback to get just as familiar with the first unit, but it allows the multiple receiving threats that Ball State does have this year in Bowick, Robinson, and Koziel, and Magwood, to get more familiar with Caden rather than trying to split everything between Caden and Kyle.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You never expect what's going to happen in the transfer portal, and now the conversation is the continuity of quarterback and everything along those lines. It's Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News, as it feels like there's another transfer portal-related topic each and every week, Kyle. We'll see what happens this week for our conversations next week, but appreciate the perspective. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mark.
That's Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News. Interesting stuff there. And again, nothing's determined at all. Even if Kyle had stayed with the team and not entered the transfer portal, there's a lot of things that can change. We even saw it last year. So very interesting stuff along those lines. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to have Pat Boylan from the Pacers and Fever Networks. He was a big part of last night at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, where 10,000 of the close friends gathered to watch Caitlin Clark get drafted by the Fever, and he's going to join us tomorrow at 4:25. Big thanks to Donan Cruz, Ball State men's volleyball coach, and Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News. We are back with you tomorrow, same time, same place, 4 o'clock, here on the Talk of Muncie, WMUN.